dangerous. No words dangerous. There's gonna be one of us in a triple zone, because we're the pirate Optimus. To the west, to the east, gonna find my way and say the way all the way to one piece. Ahoy and welcome back to Piecemeal. This is a One Piece Book Club podcast. I'm your Captain Tyler, and joining me on this week's episode is Jason.
Are we going to have a fire?
Justin.
I think we're going to have a ball.
Laura.
Pirates are neat.
And Theo.
Hello.
Welcome back to half of you.
Yeah. Sorry, I wasn't here last
week. We missed you last time.
Yeah.
Especially jumping up into the sky and learning all this new terminology.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we went to heaven, kinda.
Oh, I knew
we got extols and island. That's clouds fair. And Vars.
Vars. Dials.
Dials. Waivers. Classes of criminal.
It's definitely like leaping into a sci-fi fantasy novel where there's kitschy in-universe terms for every little thing.
Oh, that's my favorite part of a sci-fi novel, is like just not having any idea what's happening.
You just gotta piece it out as you go from context clues.
It's like, yeah, we took the Youngers out to the refab for a detrawl. It's like, what? Okay.
You just gotta use context clues.
I do like detrawl. That's just fun to say.
Now available in Mochin, Grape, Cherry, and Urge.
Every week on this show, we read and discuss one volume of the famously ongoing manga One Piece. This week, we are reading Volume 27, which is called Overture, which is a fucking hilarious thing to title Volume 27 of anything.
Yeah. Volume 28, Introduction.
Volume 29, Table of Contents.
Someday we'll reach it. Before we get started, I do have a question for you all, though, and that is, do any of you have any favorite camping traditions or favorite camping memories? If you have done any camping yourself.
I have one. Mine's really, really quick. I only went camping a few times as a little kid, like probably 6 or 7-ish, and like one time we went, I lived in, like, I grew up in upstate New York, and we went to this one camping site. I couldn't even tell you where it was, but it was pretty deep in the woods, like, it was pretty legit. And then one night, we were in the tent, and we heard a bunch of, howling really, really close to our tent, and my dad was like, he's like, it's just someone's dog, don't worry about it, or something. He downplayed it, and, like, in reality, there was a pack of coyotes outside the tent, and I'm very happy I was not being a stupid Darwin child and running outside, because I did that
go
a lot.
Pet the puppy.
I should not be alive. I just, no, like, I've done really dumb stuff as a kid. I'm too feral. Anyways, that's that story.
I did a lot of, oh, you go ahead.
Yeah, mine's real short, because I don't camp. I see the nature, and I see the bugs, and I see the rocks, and the sticks, and the heat, and I go, no ma'am.
Is that the story?
That's it. I do like s'mores, though.
Oh, s'mores
like
are good.
S'mores are very good, yeah.
And I will say that my favorite secret s'more jutsu was taught to me, actually by you, Theo, and it's that stale peeps make great roasted marshmallows.
Mm. Heck yes, they do. The sugar on the outside gets all caramelized. Yummo.
Gorgeous.
I'm kind of on board with you, Jason, because I read the anti-camping propaganda called Calvin and Hobbes as a child. And it instilled in me a desire to never go camping. But the few times that I have gone, I did enjoy the Jiffy Pop.
Mm. Ooh, yeah, that's fun. That's good stuff.
I know that exact part of Calvin Hobbes you're talking about.
Well, I've done a lot of camping. Probably my most treasured memory is a moment that, like, we were in the Red River Gorge down in Kentucky. My family goes there in the winter, and, like, I was, I don't know, in early teens, like preteen teens, like 13 maybe, and I was mad at my little brother for something, because little brothers are the way they are. and so I like went out away from the campsite to like just look at the stars and feel my feelings. And I was barefoot, which you shouldn't be while you're camping, but I was. And I felt like something cold on my toes. And like I look up and there was a raccoon just like playing with my toes.
Oh wow.
And I was just like, oh, I'm gonna get mauled.
I'm about to be a cautionary tale.
Oh no.
Oh man.
So I just kinda gently said, please stop playing with my toes, Mr. Raccoon.
Wow. He wanted to take all these piggies to market. He was like, oh, you and your viral videos about toe beans, well, how do you like it?
And he just kind of waddled off.
Yeah, sure did.
Well, if this volume is anything to go by, you should have lit a bonfire and had a party.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, I should have.
With all the raccoons.
Oh.
Dancing around.
That was my close encounter with nature.
I haven't done too much like regular camping, at least not in a long time. More recently, I've gone on like backpacking trips, a couple backpacking trips with my friends. And the one specific thing I remember a lot, we were up in the White Mountains, Tyler, up in New Hampshire, I think. And it was May, and it was, you know, it's really warm during
the day. How recently?
This was in 2015. Okay. So a little bit ago, but regardless, it was like ended up being four of us. We were all completely overwhelmed with how difficult it actually was, because White Mountains were actually way more difficult than you would think. And I just remember the second night, we underestimated how cold it was going to be. Two people brought hammocks to sleep in, and one person had a two-person tent. So we all jammed four people into a two-person tent.
Oh boy!
And it then thunderstormed really nicely. And at one point, I think because my friend was cramped up so badly, I couldn't sleep just because I you know, just was super uncomfortable. But he started snoring really low and really loud, and I just got freaked out and thought there was a bear outside. So it was one of those things where it was just like just miserable, just staring into pitch black, hearing weird things and lots of thunder.
You did have the Calvin and Hobbes experience.
I guess so. I don't remember that script, but yeah. It always ends up being a thing of like, why did I do this? and then you do it again for some reason.
Builds character.
Yeah.
I want to add one more thing, because I have... Sure. It doesn't really count as camping, but I think about this time in my life a lot. When I was like, I think 14-ish... My brother and sister and I don't know what compelled us to do it, but we just took a lot of junk in the garage and made this really strange fort in the backyard, and like, we weren't like little kids, like we were teenagers, and we just did this for no reason. And then when we did it, we're just like, let's just camp out under it. And we decided not to go to bed and be really loud, annoying, and our dad would open the window and scream at us to go to bed. We were really loud and like stupid, and I think it was like a weeknight or something. We were being really bad. And like a good hour or two through the night, my brother, he's like, oh, it's a worm. I was like, yeah, like big deal. Like, and he's like, no, like it's really big, like it was a nightcrawler and I'd never seen it before. I was like, yeah, alright, whatever. He's like, no, look, and he pulls it and it's like a foot long practically, like maybe not, but it looked massive. My sister just starts screaming like a slasher film at the top of her lungs over this stupid worm. My dad's like, go to bed. Yeah. It's pretty funny. Yeah, that's all. I just think that's really funny.
Yeah.
Well, before we get into this volume, I do want to point out that we might not hear from Melissa again until we get to the other side of Skypea.
Oh, man.
Because her life is getting fairly busy with Puppy Watch on the way for her dog. And I only bring this up because she did point out that this is roughly the point where she gave up on the anime also, and I find that hilarious. That she will be missing Skypea again.
Aww.
At almost the exact same
point. It's just not meant to be.
It's just not meant to be. But we are reading volume 27 this week. I'll start with the author's note. Oda writes, it just occurred to me yesterday that One Piece, is a really weird title. Explosive Laughter.
Okay.
He was writing it for at least 4 years at that point, and he just realized.
Yeah, that's it.
Good.
I wonder how weird it is in Japanese, because in English we at least have the reference of, like, pieces of eight.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think
at least that's what I think of when before I started reading One Piece.
Maybe yeah.
It's just, like, oh, pirates.
That makes sense.
Exactly. In the last volume, or the last several volumes, because as we go, these previously on descriptions kind of cover a lot of ground, but, when Robin tells them that there is an island in the sky, Luffy decides to make a detour for this new realm, Skypiea. With a little help from Mont Blanc Cricket, the Straw Hat sets sail for the sky. It isn't long before aerial attackers assault the ship. Fortunately, they get a little helping hand from Gonfall, the Sky Knight, but the Straw Hats aren't out of trouble yet. Apparently, Skypiea is Kami's domain, and his followers don't take kindly to trespassers. Now Luffy and crew are considered criminals and must face the challenges of Kami's most powerful servants, the vassals. Continuing on with, what is it, Wapple's Omnivorous Rampage, I think it's called, this cover story. Wapple tries to make a living selling matchsticks, but nobody wants anything to do with him.
He's just too yucky.
He is a yucky man through and through.
See, I think this is where, I think, was it Hans Christian Andersen fell short with the little matchstick girl? they didn't anticipate the old matchstick yucky man. It's like, what if the little matchstick girl was not like the portrait of innocence laid low by capitalism, but what if it was just like a middle-aged yucky guy?
Yeah, what if the little matchstick girl had cast iron stubble?
It was just a former king who ate everything.
And just ate buildings.
He begins to resort to eating discarded toys and junk under the bridge, where he now sleeps.
Good.
Some robots.
Yeah, he starts producing hybrid toys and robots with Munch Munch Factory after eating all this junk. And the local kids start to fall in love with all these weird toys, so he sets up a little stall to sell them to make some money.
The stall is shaped like the hippo cape.
Who had a name?
Who did? He sure did.
I don't know if we ever knew it. We knew its brother.
We didn't. It was like, what, Robson's brother?
Yeah, brother of Robson. Wapple then opens up a humble little shop under the bridge, and then he is quickly overwhelmed with demand for these toys. In our final installment this time, a local scientist is searching the toys closely and discovers some strange properties that are inside the toys.
Can't wait to find out what that's all about.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. Quite a cliffhanger this time. So we're going to return to the Straw Hats, but first, I keep delaying it, but we will eventually talk about the volume. But I do want to mention the strangeness of the volume cover this time.
Yeah?
Especially Luffy's pose. It's not very Luffy-like to me.
Yeah.
He's not much of a winker.
He's more overtly cheeky, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's straightforward. Yeah. He tells it like it is.
Yeah.
He cheeks it like it is.
So his right eye is open, his left eye is closed, so that seems to tie back into the riddle of the missing gold.
The gold is in the right eye.
That Nolan talked about. But the other strange detail is that he has the wings of the Sky People.
He does.
And I don't know why.
Is this the volume where Luffy dies and becomes an angel?
Oh, yeah.
I guess we'll finally have to read it and find out.
I didn't catch that.
He's an angel for the remaining, like, 80 volumes.
Yeah, the end is just gonna...
He's an angel already.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah.
I agree.
Lamb of God.
I do also have a quick correction from something that I said last time, because Jason, you asked if this sacrificial altar that they're on, being 1,000 years old, was now our oldest point on the timeline.
Mm.
And I did think so, but then I went back and checked, and technically Alubarna Palace is 4,000 years old.
Oh, okay.
Ooh. Good to know.
Gotcha.
Wait, this altar is 1,000 years old?
The altar, yeah, that they're stuck on in the jungle is 1,000 years old. Robinson.
There are... Okay, there. I may have misunderstood some things in this volume.
Back with Luffy and his gang, fighting the Ball Man.
The Ballman.
The Ballman. Luffy puts Sanji and Usopp in charge of getting the crow boat back while he deals with Satori. Unfortunately, Satori still knows everything that Luffy is going to do before he does it, and he slams him into a tree.
It's quite a slam.
It's quite a jam.
Satori launches a surprise ball over at Usopp, who instinctually lets go of the branch that he's holding onto, not wanting to get blown up, but when it brushes past his nose, flowers just pop out of it.
Well, it was a dud.
And he immediately regrets letting go. And then proceeds to eat total shit.
Yeah, I feel like...
Sure does.
Oof. I don't know. I feel like you don't see fall damage just depicted in things that often.
Right.
And it's just rough.
It is not a pleasant landing. Luffy tries to use Gum Gum Gatling, but he ends up just triggering a bunch of the balls at random, and they begin to ricochet around the forest.
That's the good shit.
My favorite part is when four of them have a quartet of birds pop out.
Yeah.
Four is up.
They just have a little barbershop quartet of tweeting.
Yeah, and then they beat the shit out of Usopp some more.
Poor man.
Because he hasn't had enough.
Usopp, the poor fella.
Usopp uses a new gadget to try and catch up with the boat, which is a grappling hook that he has attached to his belt, and which he has entitled Usopp Ah!
I love all of the Tarzan yells in this volume.
He nearly swings onto the boat, but the release mechanism on his rope gets stuck, and he just ends up swinging back the way he came.
It's a really well-manufactured belt. It's very sturdy.
Too sturdy. Sanji rescues the two idiots from swinging around the jungle, and he tells them that they need to forget about the boat for now and focus on dealing with the Ballman. He is interrupted by the sudden arrival of said Ballman, who uses impact directly on Sanji's chest and causes him to cough up blood and drop to the ground.
Oh, you're gonna stain that beautiful shirt.
Mm-hmm. It's so, yeah, it's such a pretty shirt.
I don't think I noticed before that he had goggles as well. They all have goggles.
Yeah, everybody seems to have goggles up here.
Hey,
it's the beach episode. We need beachy summer clothes.
We briefly flash back to a discussion on the Mary, which is after they received the whistle from Gonfall, where Nami tried convincing everyone that she should be the one to hold onto it because she's a girl. Usopp and Chopper both object because they are also tiny and weak and want to use the whistle, and Luffy objects because he wants to blow it for fun.
I wanna.
They all settle the argument by hanging the whistle on the mast of the ship so that if anyone gets in trouble, they'll all know where to run and find the whistle.
That's a good solution.
It is. It's a good compromise. In present time, Chopper remembers that he's got the whistle with him, and he hangs it around his neck just in case he needs it.
He's just a little guy.
One of the Kami's vassals arrives at the ship, and Chopper immediately blows the whistle seconds after putting it on, which is depicted in the manga in slow motion.
Love it.
He's like, just in case emergency. Oh, fuck! Here we go.
Emergency now.
We cut over to Gonfall's home, which is a humble little hut somewhere in the sky, and I think Melissa sent me some kanji notes that... On his home, it reads something akin to a horse stable or horseback riding stable.
Mm. Oh, okay. It goes bird, I guess.
Yeah.
I like that we get a lot of errant, like, occasional harp strumming from Kanis.
Yeah.
as written in English as plu plu pli pla pla pli plu.
So beautiful. So delicate.
Serene.
Yeah, serene. Gonfall tells Konis and Pagia to rest and not to fear because Enel's mantra can't reach them here.
I'm seeing a lot of that word, and I'm not sure what it means, and I don't like it.
Yeah, seems like some magical powers.
He is tending to his garden of pumpkins, and he begins to explain to them what pirates are. First, he uses the term criminal to describe them, but he then changes his mind to outsiders instead.
I appreciate getting to see, like, what pirates are in this world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He goes on to say that in every realm, there are those who refuse to play by the rules. Right now, are you any different from them? It's all a matter of perspective. Those whose actions make them heroes in times of war might, under other circumstances, be branded as murderers. I too made friends with pirates over 20 years ago, when I was still commie. They were a heroic, lively bunch, and I was sad to part with them. You wouldn't know it now, but Skypiea is a land that has always had fighting. Our kind, the Sky People, and the guerrillas, the Shandians, have been locked in perpetual war, and the Shandians continue to challenge Enel to this day.
And it sounds like this commie was trying to broker some kind of a peace between the Sky People and the Shandians.
Yes, evidently he was pretty close to achieving that until Enel usurped him. Mm. And then everything fell apart again.
I'm liking this softer costume of him, where he's gardening. It's kind of like a mix between, like, Master Roshi and Great Saiyaman. It's a good look.
Confal continues telling them that there is an ancient legend here in Skypiea. Many eons ago, on the day that Sacred Upper Yard was born, a beautiful song rang out from the island and enveloped the land. It was on that day that the fighting between the Shandians and the Sky People began. That is why I believe that the next time we hear the song of the island, the fighting will stop.
The sacred land shall sing once more.
Pierre hears the whistle being blown and he alerts Gonfall, and then they hop into action.
He is out like a shot.
Meanwhile, the Going Merry has caught fire.
Not good.
No! And it's part of our Nakama.
Chopper is doing his best to protect the ship, but it's not going well. He yanks the flaming mast off and he hurls it into the sea clouds surrounding the altar.
I mean, that's a good way to do it.
It stops it for now, at least.
It's kind of like a strategical amputation of parts of the boat.
Yeah. He approaches it with a doctor's eye.
Surgeon's finesse.
Yeah.
It's always kind of rough to think that he's strong enough to rip the mast out and throw it into the thing, but he's too, like, kind of, you know, completely useless against this guy.
Right, it's overwhelmed.
Just, yeah.
He is being attacked by Enel's vassal, the Skyrider Shura, and his terrible flame-spitting rock, Fuza.
I love him.
He complains, "You don't want me to attack your comrades, you don't want me to destroy your ship, and you don't want to die. You don't leave me with a lot of options. What a spoiled brat you are. People like you make me sick. If you care so much about living, why are you so weak?
Man, why can't I just kill anything? Jeez."
Were you going to say something, Jason?
Oh, he's just giving off very, like, pick a struggle kind of vibes.
Shura's spear is burning hot and is able to light fire to the ship. And he also seems able to anticipate Chopper's moves, just like Satori.
What the hell? There's some cheating going on in this heaven.
There's a lot of cheating going on. He explains to Chopper the game that's being played in Upper Yard, and that his friends are encountering the four challenges that are set up in front of the altar. Each vassal has their own domain, and none of the other vassals may enter it, but the altar is a no-man's land, and is free game for any of the vassals to attack. He says that if they had all stayed put on the boat and waited for Luffy to rescue them, there would be no problem, but because Zoro and the others traipsed off into the jungle, Chopper has to be punished now.
There must be a sacrifice.
If you'd only played by our arbitrary rules that we did not tell
explain.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah.
None of this would have... Now you're making me the bad guy. Oh, now you don't want spears through your torso. Okay.
Oh, snowflake.
He did come from Drum Island. Chopper is stabbed by the spear, but rescued seconds later by the arrival of Gonfall, and then the two Sky Riders engage in a jousting match in the sky.
It looks fucking sick.
Yeah.
Gonfall, whose glove begins to sizzle, reaches out and he hits Shura with the same impact that Satori was using.
The one that, like, destroys the spine or whatever?
Yeah. Allegedly.
Where do we get Hadoukens in this? How...
It's heaven. Anybody can Hadouken in heaven.
Yeah, didn't you know?
Yeah. You're right. Also, I didn't realize this. Ain't no, I might have noticed this in the last volume and then just forgot that I had noticed it, but ain't no angel wings on Gonfall.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's true. Mm. Good eyes.
In the SBS, we learn a little more about Smoker and Hina. They are 34 and 32, respectively, and they join the Marines at around the same time as one another. And Smoker has been on the verge of discharge countless times, and Hina is always the one to patch things over for him.
Oh, Smoker.
Also,
what a rascal.
Smoker's birthday was made by a fan to be March 14th or White Day, and Hina's is March 3rd or Girls Day.
Oh, nice.
I forget, White Day is the one where the boys, there's, in Japan, there's the one where the boys buy chocolate for the girls, and there's one where the girls buy chocolate for the boys.
Mm-hmm. Like, and two separate Valentine's Days, basically.
Two separate ones. I think...
two chocolate opportunities.
So many opportunities.
I want candy.
While Valentine's Day is typically celebrated by women and girls presenting chocolate gifts to men, White Day, the reverse happens. Men produce, give a lot of, like, chocolate gifts to women. Oh, and a lot of this is white chocolate. That feels like an unfair trade. I'll be real. I mean, I like chocolate. If there was a holiday in which I was expected to give regular chocolate, and then a month later I would receive white chocolate, I'd be like, I have some notes.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Yeah, I have...
That's a good point. I agree with that.
Enraged by being attacked, Shura begins to enact his challenge against Gonfall, which is the string challenge. Whatever right. that means.
Isn't that one of the doorways?
That is what one of the doorways were, yeah.
Okay.
Just a quick reminder, it was ball, string, iron, and swamp are the four options.
These really aren't thematically linked. And I'm okay with that.
We meet a young girl who is sneaking back into the Hidden Cloud Village, which is the home of the Shandians.
Mm.
Her name is Aisa, and she is scolded by another Shandian named Kamakiri for sneaking to Upper Yard and stealing Vars again.
I looked up Kamakiri to try and figure out if that was, like, some kind of, like, unique, like, Japanese folklore thing. Kind of like how I'm seeing a lot of, you know, like, Shura, like, Ashura, you know, stuff like that. Kamakiri just means mantis. And also, it's apparently the name of a mantis-themed hero in My Hero Academia.
Mm.
So I gotta read...
I
gotta,
that anime.
I gotta start reading that again, because his design looks fucking sick.
I think Ice is another bird name, if I'm remembering correctly. We are also formally introduced to the Shandian that we have been seeing around, the one with the bazooka. But now he has his mask off, and his name is Wiper.
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 I recognize that tattoo on his arm.
Yeah.
And now there's one going up his shoulder and on his face.
On his face.
What a cool guy.
He's having a strategy meeting with the other Shandian warriors on their next assault against Enel, and he reminds them that the final warriors from the great warrior Kalgara were to bring back the light of Shandora.
Hmm.
Aisa thinks that Wiper, who is apparently the descendant of the great warrior Kalgara, is even scarier than Kami Enel.
He's a scary-looking guy. He's got that white chase smoker kind of toothy grimace.
Yeah, got a mean look to him. Yeah. Meanwhile, in the jungle, Robin is examining a well that a tree has grown over, which she finds to be very odd, especially up here in the sky.
Yeah, where are all the nutrients for these trees? These are massive trees.
They are enormous trees.
Huge.
Nami, getting a better look around up in one of the trees, spots something with her binoculars that freaks her out.
That we won't see.
Yeah. Did anybody have any idea what she saw?
I had no clue.
No clue.
So it was a big surprise.
I'm just like, it's got to line up with information she already has, and that's all I really had to go off of.
Meanwhile, back at the altar, Gonfall and Shura continue to dash around one another in the sky, until Gonfall suddenly finds that he can't move anymore.
Uh-oh.
Shura runs him through with the burning spear and reminds him that he has succumbed to the mysterious string challenge. So you can probably guess what happened based on that.
I can't.
I also cannot.
Did he fail some challenge that we don't know about, but he did?
Not to spoil it, but string is the clue.
Was he held in place as if by a marionette, like a puppeteer?
You're on the right track there.
Okay.
Gonfall falls into the cloud river below. And I do just want to point out that chapter 250 is named Ball Dragon.
Sure is.
I think sure is a pretty cheeky title.
I like it.
It tickled my funny bone.
There's an event later on that I find, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I found too similar to Dragon Ball to be a coincidence.
There is no fucking way on this earth that it's... When you were telling me so much about how much, like, Oda looked up to Toriyama, like, come on. And, like, literally, this... I looked up the Japanese title, and it's just Tama Dragon. Like, it's not anything special. Like, it's specifically, like, Dragon from, like, Dragon Ball.
Chopper hops into the river after Gonfall, despite being a Zoan type, which surprises even Shura.
That panel where he's just, like, sinking like a rock with, like, foam and bubbles leaking out of his mouth was just so dire. And I'm like, oh, my baby! My son!
How could you do this to him? Shura also drops Pierre into the river, and he turns his sights on the three escapees in the jungle. Meanwhile, back with Luffy's group, all three of them have been defeated by Satori's ultimate attack, the Ball Dragon, which is a dragon made of balls.
Not just any dragon, it specifically looks like a Shenron-type dragon, with like the antlers and the long, snaky body. Made of orb.
Luffy stands back up, ready to fight again, and he runs up a tree to avoid the dragon. He accidentally discovers that it's being controlled by a string that's attached to its head. He severs the string, and then he drags the dragon back to Satori, which explodes on impact.
Drag the dragon. I do love how we just get this massive, like, cutaway, like, kaboom panel. So much that even the local birds are looking over like, do you see that shit?
The fuck just happened over there?
And then the following panels, you just see, like, axes, swords, daggers just wedged into the trees all around. Like, I can hear the as it all, like, shunks into the local greenery.
Every ball erupts with its fucking Wonder Ball surprises.
It turns out they were a boom-class knife orb.
Satori barely managed to avoid the explosion, but when he let his guard down, Luffy managed to climb on his back.
Mm-hmm. He's got those convenient wings to hold on to.
Usopp, starting to use his head again, climbs to the top of the trees to find the route out of the jungle. So now it doesn't matter if they catch up to the boat because they know where it's going to wind up.
Hey.
Good thinking. He figured that if they fell down, the route had to go back up at some point.
Hey, makes sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Luffy wraps his arms and legs around Satori, locking him in place, and then Sanji prepares a final blow, and he tells Satori that he's got a challenge of his own, a love challenge.
Oh boy.
I love Satori's response. Is he crazy
Thus
too?
Thus we begin a multi-page monologue of Sanji about to whip this man's ass.
Luffy points out that being able to predict our moves must be pretty handy in a fight, but it won't do you any good if you can't get away.
You just have to know what's coming.
Yeah, now you just get to know what's going to happen to you before it happens. Satori demands that they let him go, because if they don't submit to his judgment, they'll be Class 1 criminals, which is tantamount to declaring war on Kamianel himself.
To which Sanji says, shut your mouth before the flavors escape. For example, to get the ultimate flavor of pepper in a mignonette, it is not the size or the coarseness that matters, but how you crack it. Do it right and the sealed-in flavors will burst into an exquisite taste. And the trick is to release it all at once.
Sanji leaps into the air, somersaulting over and over and over again, until he cracks Satori over the head with a mighty heel drop.
The concussor.
Sure is.
Fucking great splash panel.
Yeah,
the motion, Mary.
And this is what I mean, is that I don't think it's a coincidence that in the chapter called Ball Dragon, the way that they defeat their enemy is to hold him in place and then use a spiraling attack on him.
Ooh.
Good point.
Okay.
We have layers.
I see it. Like we're fighting Raditz all over again.
Except Luffy didn't have to die.
How about that?
How about that? Well, we're already in heaven, so what would be the point?
That's true. And we're already on Snake Way.
Yeah, hey. I do love Satori's pleas right before getting owned is, I'm not good with pain. It's like, word.
I feel that.
Damn, that's crazy.
That's why we're doing it on you. You need to stop.
Back at the Hidden Cloud Village, Wiper confirms with Aisa that two of their foes have fallen. It is Gonfall and one of Kami's vassals, almost at the same time. Aisa apparently has very strong mantra. Again, whatever that is.
Something.
Just getting drip-fed, whatever this special power is.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to be a heightened awareness.
ESP.
ESP of some kind.
Mm.
Wiper takes this as a sign of the perfect time to strike against Enel, with his forces weakened.
You know, it feels a little weird after a huge, long, protracted battle that we had in the previous arc about stopping a rebellion,
mm-hmm.
and before there was too much bloodshed and the true nature of Alabasta and its people. And now in this chapter, it's like, no, we're doing the Civil War right now.
Get him.
We're doing this today, actually.
Aisa warns the Shandia woman that she always hides behind, whose name is Rocky, that the vassal wasn't the one that was fighting Gonfall, but the one that was fighting the Blue Sea people. Rocky asks for Isa's bag, promising to sneak some Varse back for her during the raid. Usopp collects Sanji and Luffy, and the three of them make it back safe and sound to the crow boat, thanks to Usopp's grappling hook. With no problems along
the
way.
Now, you say safe and sound.
Safe and sound.
Were some of those sounds wham, bang, thump, ouch, ouch, as
That does sound familiar.
Yeah, as Usopp, with Luffy holding onto him and with Sanji holding onto him, just fucking rattle-banged off of every, like, fucking tree trunk, branch, stick, twig in the forest on the way up to the boat.
Just one final ricochet around the jungle on the way out. Enel's two other vassals reflect on Satori's defeat, though the Coolio-haired one seems to have trouble speaking with his mouth open.
He's just gotta bite his lip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He interrupts his own monologue by just biting his lip, so we don't get to hear the rest of whatever he said.
Looks like he just took a big bite out of a lemon.
Sometimes your compulsions just get the best out of you.
Yeah. It's true.
It's relatable.
The Shandians make their move and they begin to raid Upper Yard themselves.
Hmm.
Suddenly, Chopper sits up, awake at the altar again. And Pierre and Gonfall are laying next to him and are still unconscious.
Ooh.
So he wonders who pulled them up out of the river, but a large shadow looms over him and we hear a familiar bird call.
Joe!
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 It's the JoJo birds.
Yeah!
Back with Nami's group, they discover the answer to the mystery of Upper Yard.
Hmm.
They find the other half of Cricket's hut.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That hut that had the plywood palace put in front of it.
Yeah.
There is another half of it, and it's up here in the sky.
How lucky to find it on this whole island.
Yeah. They begin to realize that Upper Yard was originally part of Jaya, and was tossed to the sky via the knock-up stream.
And so it was one of those, we get the true conspiracy theory about, you know, Noland and his El Dorado,
mm-hmm.
in that it didn't sink all the way down to the bottom of the ocean. It went up.
Yeah, it's been in the sky.
It flew into the sky.
For 400 years. And as they make that discovery, Chopper finds himself surrounded by enormous southbirds.
That don't want to kill him for some reason, so that's good.
Nami is pumped that the City of Gold is waiting for them up here in the sky.
She is so excited.
She both thanks Kami and forgets him within seconds. Too focused on gold now.
Listen, money and tangerines. We've been through this.
Yeah.
Head empty, except money and tangerines.
Those are the two things she likes.
True.
Meanwhile, skirmishes are breaking out between the Shandians and the vassals all over Upper Yard, and some of them even run into Luffy's group on the crow boat. Wiper fires a bazooka cannonball at Luffy, who bounces it away, and Wiper realizes that Luffy is a Paramecia user.
A what?
A Paramecia user. Paramecia. So this is another one of those Devil Fruit classifications, like Zoan.
Aha!
And I think that in the next few volumes, Viz is going to switch to Paramythia.
Paramythia?
Yeah.
Because Paramecia makes me think of, like, a tick. Or
right.
Like a very small,
little,
like an amoeba kind of deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do kind of like Paramythia better because that was like the Greek term for fairy tale.
Oh, wow. Really?
That's
really cool.
I like how that sounds a lot. That's so
okay.
Yeah.
That does sort of apply to these nonsense powers.
Yeah.
That everybody has.
That's a good point. I did not know that.
Interesting that the Shandians know what devil fruits are and their specific classifications also.
How do they know about
considering
that all the way up in the sky?
Yeah, they've been stuck in the sky for 400 years. But Shura, one of the vassals, also knew what a Zoan was.
Yeah.
So the sky people also have some familiarity with devil fruits. Wiper threatens them not to interfere on this island and to just go back to the Blue Sea, and then he dips.
I mean, that's basically like saying, don't push this big red button.
Especially to somebody like Luffy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Don't embark on this adventure.
Don't you do it.
Nami's group returns to the Mary, and they find that the mast is missing, and Chopper is nowhere to be seen. He eventually wanders out, all bandaged up, and he tries to casually convince them that nothing happened while they were gone.
Aw, buddy.
His
face
is a waterfall.
He
does not put on
a
very convincing display, though.
He's like, it's fine.
I mean, that's me on a Tuesday.
Yeah. Look how supportive all of them were. It's a good sign.
Yeah. It's okay, buddy.
He's doing the wrong peeking.
You're right.
Oh, buddy.
At the same time, the crow boat arrives, and all of the Straw Hats reunite. And this is not necessarily an X mark, but I did want to point out that we are starting to see one of Robin's character quirks or characteristics, which is that she has a not necessarily sense of humor, but morbid streak in her, where she will just point out something pretty dire that everyone else is like, what the fuck are you talking about?
It's one of my favorite things about her, like, by far.
She just says, maybe he was torn limb from limb. Who knows?
So good. I love her.
She's
so good.
She's very good.
I want to point out this bit. Usopp goes to inspect where the mast was, and Chopper is, like, kind of tripping over himself, apologizing. It's like, I tried to stop him, there was a big fire, and then Usopp...
Especially to Usopp, because everybody knows how much the ship means to Usopp.
Right, and then Usopp turns to him and says, did you take care of your wounds? And it was just like, my heart.
The ship is replaceable, but Chopper is not.
Yeah.
And specifically, here's the best part of that is that in that panel he's like doing a double face, like he's looking one way with one expression and back with another. He's looking at the mask with like a
this again,
and then but looking back at Chopper with a "It's okay, buddy, it's okay." And it's, you know, I'm glad that we can recognize the ability to feel both those things at once. That's a very human thing.
Chopper is determined to become a strong, reliable man.
He already is.
I like that little panel of himself with his soul's fire set ablaze.
Yeah.
Oh, buddy.
With daylight waning, the Straw Hats decide to repair the ship tomorrow, and they go back into the jungle to set up camp. When that's done, they all pool their knowledge of Skypiea that their groups individually collected, and Luffy declares that they are going to go find the gold in El Dorado.
Yeah.
Pirates.
Gonna take that treasure.
Let's go get some money. I'm tired of being poor.
Oh, and we learn in the SBS that Nami was given, like, Nojiko's bracelet after the Arlong Park arc.
Yeah, such a minuscule little detail, but it's really nice that it's included.
Yeah.
Where it's representing the tangerine for Bellemare and the pinwheel for Genzo, her foster mother and father, as well as a foster sister. Mm-hmm. Family is important, even though it's not blood. It's still family.
It's not biological family, it's logical family.
Hey!
That's great.
Now
I
we're...
stole that from Armistead and Oppen.
Okay. That's, there's some spice on that. There's some pepper on that steak.
The Shandians, who are starting to pile up wounds, retreat for the night, and Anil's vassals are called to meet with the Kami.
We're going to see the Kami.
And then we just get a fantastic camping scene.
Yeah, camping
it's so
episode.
Good.
I love every detail in this whole scene.
It's just like, it's everything I want. It's like relaxing, it's fire, it's how do people deal with responsibility.
Yeah, they're distilling water and putting it into canteens, getting food and supplies, Chopper's doctoring, making med.
We got Nami with the maps. We get this hot rock stew as the main dish, which is the heat from the hot rocks placed into the stew helps cook it.
Robin finds rock salt.
She finds a big chunk of, big old Breath of the Wild chunk of rock salt.
Yeah? How'd that get up there?
Nami calls to order the official Straw Hats' What Are We Going to Do Tomorrow meeting. They confirm that Upper Yard is just a part of Jaya that was knocked into the sky, but they wonder why everything here is so fucking big.
Very big. Birds big. Trees very big.
Robin postulates that it has to be something about the environment in Skypiea. Something to do with the island clouds that has the power to rapidly speed up the growth of fauna and flora.
Must be it.
That's gotta be it. That's the only explanation.
Yeah, why not?
Nami reminds everyone of Nolan's cryptic final passage in his log, which is, "I saw the gold in the skull's right eye." She then shows them a discovery that she made about the maps of Jaya and Skypiea.
She lays
them... Nami's good at maps, in case you forgot.
Yeah.
She lays them one on top of the other, and it turns out they line up and they make a skull.
Yeah, she lined up the seashores where the two huts could be found.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was the clue that gave her the idea to do this in the first place. And when placed together, they roughly form the shape of a skull, and inside the right eye of the skull is where they will find the lost city of El Dorado.
Whoa, Kami's temple, I think.
Curiously, the left eye is missing.
Mm. Yeah.
It's just like ocean, right?
Yeah, there's just a chunk of island that isn't there.
Which is interesting because in several cover stories, we've had a lot of people with their left eye closed or obscured.
This one in particular.
This one in particular.
Could this possibly be an X mark, Tyler, my friend?
we'll wait and see till we get at the end, I guess.
That's true.
As it gets later, Robin suggests that they put out the fire so that they don't alert enemies to their location, but Luffy and Usopp find this notion ridiculous.
You gotta have a campfire if you're camping, otherwise what are you doing?
It's not camping without a campfire.
You gotta roast marshmallows on that campfire. What are you gonna do? Just eat a raw marshmallow?
Come on,
like a
Robin.
Savage?
Been missing out on so much of life. Running for the government for 20 years. Zoro and Sanji collect a huge stack of logs for a bonfire.
Let's kick this up.
This is a big bonfire. Yeah. This is bigger than when my friend put a whole Christmas tree on their campfire and the neighbor came out and was like, "Yo, boss, you got this under control?
We good out here?"
Are we good?
The Straw Hats party into the dead of night with an enormous bonfire, singing, dancing, banging drums, and living it up.
Living it so up.
And
even
the nearby
forest wolves come out and join.
The nearby cloud wolves join in the revelry.
This is fairy tale shit right here. Okay. We're having fey dances with the fauna, the wolves.
This is better than dances with wolves.
Last year, Oda pointed out, I forget if this was part of an interview or if he was just putting this out there, but Oda gave his top three scenes that he has drawn in One Piece. And this campfire, this bonfire scene was his third favorite scene he's ever drawn.
Oh, really?
And he said it was what convinced him to draw the Skypiea arc in the first place, was this idea of this party.
That's great.
Huh.
Sometimes you just throw a lot of attention, time, and focus around a specific... It's like a pearl around an irritant in a clan. You build the pearl around it, And sometimes the sand at the very base of it is just a sick party.
There is a detail that I noticed this time reading through that I hadn't before, that I'm curious if anyone else noticed. What does the moon look like?
It was kind of like a three-quarters moon, right?
Yeah.
It's about half, I would say. We're getting close to it.
I definitely did not get this until you mentioned it.
It's been waning from full. I know that. Because I keep an eye on the moon.
I agree with that. It's always beautifully drawn, and like I notice it, but I don't know what it means or imparts.
I've got the panel open, and it's
yeah. I'm gonna post some pictures real quick.
Yeah, that's the panel I got open, where it's like I don't know what you call phases. Hang on, and this is a first quarter moon. No.
Yes. No.
Yes.
Okay. I thought it was.
I think it.
It's after waxing crescent. It's first quarter moon.
Yeah. Because it was full. I think maybe the moon phases go opposite from Earth.
They appear to.
Because it's waning on the other side than it should be waning for Earth, for Earth moon.
I'm going to post a picture in the Discord of what it looks like to me.
My brain hurts. Oh.
Oh, you see it. You see a D in the moon.
I see D in the sky.
Interesting.
I see a lemon wedge.
I don't know what this could possibly mean, but I like it.
And the reason it stuck out to me is specifically what's being talked about in those panels.
Yeah.
But I'll get there in a second. Let's return to the party for now, though.
Woo!
Because Gonfall wakes up and he joins them, taking a seat with Robin and Zoro. He overheard their discussion and learned that this place was once called Jaya. And he says, "For you all, this land is something you take for granted, but here in the sky, this shouldn't even exist. Things can grow on island clouds, but they cannot be born there. Greenery and soil don't normally exist in the sky. We call this Vars. To those who live in the sky, this embodies our eternal hopes."
It's the Earth.
At the same time, the Shandians are arguing over what happened to their friend Kamakiri, and Rocky accepts blame for his injuries because he was trying to protect her while she was filling Ice's bag with Vars.
Now, does Vars specifically mean, like, soil or anything that is from the Earth?
Yeah, it's just whatever's from below that comes up.
Hmm.
So it is the soil, the trees, any supplies and stuff that gets tossed up.
Altitudinal flotsam.
Yeah. Kamakiri breaks up their argument and tells them that he can still fight. And if we defeat Enel, a mere bag full of Vars will be insignificant. Let us return Shandia to the state it was 400 years ago. And where he says that is the close-up panel of the D-Moon.
Of the D-Moon.
The D being seen with the phrase, "Return Shandia to the state it was 400 years ago," feels significant to me.
Interesting.
And reminds me again of...
why.
Reminds me of, again of resetting things to zero.
Resetting things to... Yeah. And that was kind of what happened with Alabasta, too. It's like the state of zero for Alabasta was when the rain comes. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
As the Straw Hats and the wolves all fall asleep, and I love that panel of Luffy just snuggling up with a sky wolf.
Yeah.
Just a big old pillow.
Oh, right.
Usopp wanders off to take a piss. But then he hears a clanging coming from the Mary. Though it is very foggy, he does see a small silhouetted figure hammering on the ship. And he passes out. Freaked out by whatever he's seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And Zoro goes to check on him later and finds him passed out in the forest.
You know, good on Zoro for keeping an eye on his camping mates. It's important to, like, just know where people are so nobody gets lost in the woods or falls off a cliff.
Mm-hmm. It's good to check in.
The three remaining vassals arrive to meet with Enel, and we learn the names of the two that we don't know yet, which are Gadatsu, which is the Coolio-haired one.
Mm-hmm.
And Ohm, the one with a big dog.
Big dog and a very big sword.
Yes. Wonder who he's gonna fight.
Could be anyone.
Hmm.
Could be Nami. We don't know.
It could be. We also learn Gadatsu's gimmick is that he sometimes forgets how to use his basic bodily functions. Such as biting his lip when he tries to speak and rolling his eyes back into his head when he can't see, or so that he can't see, and also crossing his arms weird.
He just kind of like, yeah, makes a little X with his arms instead of like folding his hands under his biceps like a normal person.
He just does everything slightly wrong.
A little off kilter. That's kind of what I like about him. That's his charm.
Yeah, I love because that pose, the cross arm pose, just looks so like intentional, you know?
Yeah.
But, and the fact that he, and when the guy's like, hey, you're crossing your arms long, he realizes it, and then he just keeps doing it.
Yeah.
It's great.
And on top of that, his arms have little voice bubbles that say cross.
Just so that we know what he's supposed to be doing. Skybreeder Ohm is in charge of the Challenge of Iron, and again has the very big sword. And Sky Boss Gadatsu is in charge of the Challenge of the Swamp.
Mm-hmm.
We also meet the commander of Kami's Heavenly Warriors, which is a very large man named Yama.
Mm. And that is Japanese for mountain. I know that name.
And finally, we meet the man himself, Kami Enel.
And I love this jerk.
Kami Enel, baby. Eyelashes.
He's a pretty cool jerk.
Yeah,
he like
one of the few times that they've translated a unique laugh into the Viz version, which is Yahaha.
Yeah.
Aha. Oh, he's a Korok from Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
Oh shit. I wish you'd say that you found me.
Jason, I'm curious if he visually reminds you of anyone.
Oh, that's a Raijin, baby.
Well, more so in the face. Do you think he bears a resemblance to anyone in our world?
Oh, what? I don't.
You did accidentally bring it up last time.
Shit. Is he Buddha?
No. He resembles Eminem.
Oh,
he does. No,
was that the X mark?
Yes, he is.
No.
He
goodness.
My name isn't. I want to break down the design real quick. Because he like does, he kind of like flips and like kind of half beats the shit out of his vassals. Like, as he does cartwheel flippy dips, and then lands into, like, a fucking Emperor's New Groove pose on his plush throne. And he's got the Raijin vibes, because...
You're destroying Laura
perfect.
Right
now. Oh, perfect.
Burying Laura into the ground.
No. My jokes attack the spinal cord directly. He's got like a ring piercing his shoulder blades that kind of goes up and around, and it's got those sort of like...
It's got the Raijin drums.
The Raijin drums on him. And also, important, no wings.
Yes.
Not seeing no wings on this.
I didn't notice that.
I wanted to mention Buddha because his earlobes are super duper long.
Yes.
And that was a known like... I don't know if it was, like, real, but, like, all the depictions of Buddha, like, Siddhartha Gautama, like, have the super long earlobes.
Elongated lobes, yeah. Oh, were you going to mention something, Justin?
I didn't. I was just going to also, point out the earlobes. I wouldn't have had nearly as much detail, but yes, exactly. That was the other thing that stuck out to me.
So between Satori reminding me of Paul Williams and Gadatsu having the Coolio look and... NL himself kind of resembling Eminem. There is a musician theme going on with these guys, to me at least.
Is this guy Eminem? Eminemel?
Eminem?
I can't even say it! Eminemel. There it is.
Enamel. It's a tongue twister.
Enamel, yeah.
Enamel, great.
After smacking his vassals around a bit, just because he was bored, he tells them that they should take the Blue Sea People more seriously, and that they are after the gold of Jaya. Also, seems like he has lightning powers, based on these attacks.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the visuals that we saw last time of the beams of light coming from the sky.
Tommy's judgment.
It's really weird, because, like, the symbolism and like the aesthetic that Enel has is there's a lot going on.
Yes.
Like we mentioned like Raijin, we mentioned Buddha, but also like his throne and also his god pagoda that he's in also has like the kanji for kami, and then right above that is like what looks to be like a cross with a starburst that you would typically find in like Christian churches.
Just a lot of religious mishmash happening.
It's definitely a pastiche.
I'm God, the end.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All of them.
Yes. Which I represent one? All of them.
Yeah.
He says, tomorrow they will no doubt begin their search. Meanwhile, the Shandians will try to take advantage of this to launch another attack. That is why, as of tomorrow, I am opening up all of Upper Yard to you three. You are free to use any challenge at any location. No rules, no limits. We cannot allow anything to interfere with our plans. Maxim is almost complete, and when it is, this island won't matter. Let us set out on a journey to the world of our dreams.
What?
What is that going on? What do you mean,
happening?
Bud?
What's the plan? Is this like mantra but more?
What even the fuck?
Maxim. You're already in the sky.
He wants mom's spaghetti.
Mom's spaghetti is almost complete.
The next morning, the Straw Hats find that the Mary has, albeit kind of shakily, been repaired for them. They have no idea.
By whom?
Can I theorize?
Sure.
I have a theory.
Go for it.
Because it's the little man we saw in the fog with a little hammer. Mm-hmm. Could this perhaps be a surprise reappearance of Mr. Minotomo the Carpenter?
Whoa, good memory. He sees something broken and he has to repair it.
Even within the panels themselves. They have
it's
no
okay,
idea how...
There's fog obscuring him.
Yeah. They have no idea how it was fixed or who could have fixed it. Also, strangely, the crest, wings, and tail that were added to get into the sky weren't included in the repairs. So they figure it was somebody who knew what Mary's original design looked like. Usopp wishes that Mary could talk so that she could tell him who did it. The Straw Hats split into two teams again, a treasure hunting team and a getaway driver team. Luffy, Chopper, Robin, and Zoro head out to find El Dorado, while Usopp, Nami, and Sanji take the Mary off of Upper Yard to rendezvous with them later. Zoro and Luffy argue about which direction they're supposed to be going.
Oh no.
Zoro thinks that because they're looking for the skull's right eye, they go right.
Girl, not this. We've been through this.
Luffy tells him that they're supposed to be going west, even though he's going east. And they're both wrong because they're supposed to be going south.
Which means down. Into the ground.
Thank you, Nico Robin.
She's just like, Chopper, can you please tell them to get over here? And as they walk along, Luffy and Chopper both find very cool sticks. But they also encounter a very large snake.
I screenshotted that panel of Chopper going, that's a cool stick, Luffy!
This is very relatable as, like, a summer camp counselor. Like, one kid will find a good stick, and everybody else will be like, wow, I want
a
cool
stick. That's a great
stick. Mm-hmm. They just hit everything within reach.
Oh, yeah.
It's as if they found the master sword.
As the Mary slowly travels the river, being pushed by the crow boat, Gonfall takes the opportunity to tell them all a bit about Skypiea.
I love this very slow panel of, shall I tell you a bit about the history of this land? I'm expecting like a Zelda dialogue like, yes, no. And if you hit no, then you'll get like some sort of but thou must dialogue.
In place of that is Pierre biting Usopp's head so that he'll listen.
He sure does.
Sure does.
It's good that he turns into a horse first.
400 years ago, various items would occasionally come up to the sky via the knock-up stream, until the giant Varse from Jaya arrived. The sky people considered it a sacred site that was bestowed by the heavens. However, it was already inhabited, and fighting broke out over its ownership. He says, I'm sorry to say, we sky people got greedy and stole their homeland. In the 400 years since, the fighting between our people has raged on. All that the Shandians want is to take back their motherland. Usopp and Sanji point out that it's the sky people who are the bad guys in this case, and Gonfall agrees with them.
I guess it kind of makes sense now that Gonfall had sort of a conquistador armor look.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
He goes on to say that 6 years ago, Enel and his minions arrived, usurping his position as Kami and enslaving his army. He became the Sky Knight in order to help deserters escape the range of Enel's mantra.
Okay, first of all, from whence did Enel come? Second of all, like, mantra, again? Has yes. a range?
Is it like Wi-Fi?
He
Is
says
it
that
5G?
Enel came from another sky island. He also says, when a person cannot act without feeling guilty, he is at his weakest. Enel is well aware of that. He turns our people into wayward lambs and then controls them. To him, the title of Kami isn't enough. He truly plays at being God. He is a tyrant.
I grew up Lutheran, and given the history of, like, Martin Lutheran just being, like, guilty all the time, I relate to this.
This is the, Oda here is playing that game of, tell me religion had a huge impact on your life without telling me that religion had a huge impact on your life.
Meanwhile, back with the treasure team, they run for their lives from the giant snake. And they end up getting separated from one another.
Look at the snake.
Big snake catfish.
Robin continues on the path, hoping that the others can find their way back. Chopper just runs around lost. Zoro goes back to going right. And Luffy thinks that due south means that he should head in the warmest direction.
Hard to fault that
one. Oh, buddy.
Right. So everything is going great with the treasure team.
This monster hunter party is just falling on some hard times.
And that is where our volume ends this week.
Whew. Can I say really quickly that just for this last part, it's kind of cool to see a big monster that they don't immediately just murder. So I feel like
I agree.
Right? Big monster that they go, oh wait, this one's actually kind of a problem.
This is actually a thing we need to worry about.
Any other thoughts for this volume?
It just feels like a lot of setting up. Of like, we're replacing the dominoes in place, and we're gonna knock them all down.
An overture, if you will.
Mm. An overture, an oh god.
Indeed.
I really, really like this era of One Piece art-wise a lot.
Oh yeah, it's one of my favorites.
Me too, so nice. I forgot how, like, it looked. It's really, really nice to go back to. Trying to think of something in particular. I guess just, like, it's still really dynamic, but the characters, like, Oda understands, like, how to draw each one now really well, differently. I don't know, it just is really, it's just a really good point in the style. Like, this in the next arc, I think, is, like, the art. The next arc, I take that back. hang on. he'll know when he gets
you
there.
You appear to have excised something from your mind.
I did, and I was so happy, you know?
Anyway. I can't wait to find out.
It's not that bad, I just don't like it.
Any other thoughts?
It is cool how, especially with this brand new area, it's like, we're going to wipe away all the things you know. Here's a ton of new things that we're going to not really tell you about for a while. Because it's just, like you said, I mean, it's like, I don't know. But I guess it kind of makes you really, I don't know, get invested in finding out.
Yeah, do you remember how Luffy just got a new huge bounty? Forget it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Exactly, yeah.
we're
up in the sky.
These people don't even use the same money. What does this mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Right, yeah.
Luffy is a criminal now.
How about some X marks?
Yes, please.
Sure.
We begin with the, in the Wapple cover story, Lifelike Toys. Gonfall met pirates 20 years ago.
Ooh, only 20.
The Song of the Island. The Light of Shandora. Great Warrior Kalgara. Declaring War on the Kami. Om said, for the enemies of Enel, there will be no dawn. natural gigantification.
Hmm.
Referring to the rapidly growing flora and fauna up here in the sky. Jaya's missing left eye. Oda's third favorite scene. The D-shaped moon. Maxim. The world of our dreams. And Usopp wishes that Mary could talk.
Ooh, that's a troubling one.
Oh dear.
That's one that makes me say hmm.
So Jason.
Yes?
Do you have a star chart for us?
I sure do.
It must be easy up here in the sky.
Yeah, we can get such a clearer view of them, honestly. And I wanted to talk about someone with a canonical birthday, Mr. Godfall, this week. How about it? He's got a birthday of December 22nd. That makes him a capricious Capricorn. So, Mr. Fall, this is what the scar... This
if
is what
we can.
If I may. This is what the stars have to say about you this week. Make sure you're not projecting a picture of yourself that doesn't represent the real you. It's important that you remain true to your soul, or you end up in situations that make you uncomfortable. There is a strong force working against you today, but you have the leadership and confidence to stand up for yourself in whatever way you need.
You got this, Godfall.
You got this. Godfall.
Thank you all for listening. I appreciate everyone who is tuning into our voyage now up in the sky every week. Jason.
Yar.
Where can our Nakama find you on the Sky-Fi?
The Sky-Fi. Y'all can find me on skytwitch.skytv. No, just twitch.tv /jaycalves, JAYCALVES. Stream a little bit whenever I can, usually Wednesday evenings. I just finished a good chunk of Nier Automata. Got me a proper,
indeed you did.
Got me a proper ending A. So I don't know. I might give up after that. I don't think there's any more to this game.
Yeah, you saw the credits. It's over.
Yeah, there's nothing more to it. But you can also use Jacobs to get to look at my other socials, Twitter, Insta, all that stuff.
Justin.
Hi, I'm at WJustinKing on Twitter and Instagram. I'm not doing a whole lot these days on there, but, you know, I would like to at some point, so...
Yeah, some I'll point in the future.
Yes, exactly. Time's moving forward.
Laura?
I'm located on a nice cumulus cloud in the troposphere. No, I am... on Twitter, Newgrounds, Patreon, and Twitch, and I go by Haha I'm Laura on every single one. She give me money because I'm literally posting a new film like tonight. Well, film is in like I should not say film and animation.
Sure.
And then she should give me a few dollary dues if you want to see it early.
And Theo.
I don't do much on the internet, but if you happen to be in or around Dayton, Ohio, you should come to the Black Box Improv Theater. We have shows.
Congrats
every
on
week.
Reopening.
Yeah, we're reopening. We have shows every Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and as of now, I perform on Thursdays.
You can follow this show on Twitter at MealPeace, or you can send us emails with comments, questions, and concerns to piecemealpodcast@gmail.com. And I would appreciate it if you would rate and review this show on your podcast service of choice and give it a 5-star rating so that all the One Piece fans of the world can find it and relive this great saga with us.
This has been Piecemeal. Keep dreaming.